Welcome to Android App Addicts, episode number 230. This is the show where we talk about Android applications, programs, games, all kinds of apps in the Google Play Store. And we also like to mix it up and have developers on the show as often as we can because it's just damn fun to talk to these guys. They're like basically changing the face of the app world and I think just the world in general because everybody uses apps every day. And the cooler the apps and the more useful the apps, the better we like our devices. So we love developers and we have a special one on the show today. I'll introduce him in a second. But let me introduce the other guys first, starting with the door-to-door geek, Steve McLaughlin from podnuts.com. Also joining us is Eric Ardini from DiniMedia.com. What's going on, Eric?
Podcasting live from the Irish Cottage in historic Galena, Illinois tonight.
That sounds so nice and quaint and Irish.
It's a very Irish place, yes. They went all out to make it Irish.
That's pretty cool. You got to give us like a 360 panorama at some point.
I do have a picture of a store with McLaughlin above my toilet. And here is a watercolor with some Irish word like McLaughlin on it.
A store with the toilet? I don't get it.
It's a watercolor painting.
Oh, a painting. A painting. I got you. Wow, that's awesome, man. McLaughlin's rule. They're all over the place. Well, like I said, we love to talk to developers and we have a special developer on the show today. Daniel DeMatteis is on the show with us today from Libretro, the creator of the RetroArch app. What is going on, Daniel?
Okay. Well, let me talk about my program a little bit. I'm also known on other circles as Twin Apex or Square Pusher. I currently had the RetroArch project. You can visit it at libretro.com if you're interested. It has a large forum attached to it. It has a large it has a large community around it. Let me talk first about what RetroArch really is. It is a program which can run multiple emulators. In case you don't know what an emulator is, it is basically a program that emulates a game console or a real computer from the past. We have a quite large emulator collection. We have around 50 or 40 different game consoles that we emulate, and you can download this program for free on the Android on the Google Play Store. It's a free app. It has no advertisements attached to it. It has no real in-app purchases. So it's entirely no strings attached. You can also download the program for multiple other systems. So if you have an iOS device and you have that jailbroken, then you can download it for that too. You can also use it on the PCs, on the Mac, on OS X, on Linux. You can also use it on Windows. So it's a cross-platform emulator front end.
So you download it, and then all the emulators are already there.
The way it works is RetroArch is not really attached to the emulator itself. It has a sort of system architecture that makes it possible for components to be loaded into it. So that means that every emulator is its own component, and the way the user works with that is that he basically starts up the program. He basically selects which emulator he wants. He selects the game he wants, and it will basically work from there. So it's basically transparent to the user. So we basically bundle in a lot of pre-existing emulators, which are already ported to our platform.
Wow, that's awesome. Mm. And I know Dor brought this to the show last week, a couple weeks ago, and said it runs amazing. Right, Dor?
Yeah, I've toyed with emulators for, to be honest, over a decade. I mean, let's just cut through the tree. It's been a long time. A lot of emulators either do the graphics okay or the sound okay or the controls okay. But I've ran this now on 3 Android devices using different controllers, using a PS3 remote, a Wiimote, and using a dedicated Bluetooth gaming remote for mobile phones. I've ran it on my Raspberry Pi is Retro Pi, which I learned is like a fork. I also ran it on my Intel NUC running Linux with Retro Rig as like the front end. And every time I've ran it on everything I've ever ran it on, it is the best emulator experience I've had ever on anything ever. I mean, this is the emulator that I just tell people it just works. You know, it's easy, it's simple, it looks great, it works great. I've never had crashes, I've never had bugs, I've never had graphic artifacts, I've never had audio artifacts happen. Everything just works great.
Damn. Awesome. You're definitely doing something right with that one, Daniel.
Yeah, that's a hell of a recommendation there. Yeah. basically, you have the Meister to thank for that, for the great audio and video sync. That's one of the things we really do well. We also have some other advanced features such as shaders. I think we are the only real app that in which you can basically stack multiple shaders on top of each other. In case you don't know what a shader is, basically it's like a post-processing filter applied on top of the image. So that means that you can apply image enhancing filters on top of the image.
Wow.
And the nice thing about shaders is that it basically happens inside the GPU, inside the GPU's pipeline. So that means that it doesn't slow down your CPU at all. That was the big problem of CPU-based filters before.
I see.
But I think we're the only app really that in which you can stack up to 8 or 16 shaders at a time. I think it really stresses out the most of the Android phones and tablets out there. I think you really need an NVIDIA Shield or something like that to really get the most out of it on Android.
Probably not too many shaders needed for retro games though, right?
No, you could be mistaken, because a lot of people like to run these CRT shaders because they feel like the best experience to play these games is to basically have the screen looking like an old cathode ray tube television.
I see.
So what they do is they emulate the scan lines with these shaders.
Awesome. And
the, wow. There are a lot of these pixel pewits for which it can never be pretty enough or never be authentic enough, because you had a million of these CRT TVs,
right,
with all kinds of different specs. So there's a lot of audiophilia stuff going on with these retro gamers. So they each want their own shader. Recently, a guy called Twoggle Monkey released a really advanced CRT shader, and that really brings the house down. You really need a really special GeForce GTX card or something to really get playable frame rates on that. So it's a really nice benchmark in that regard.
I think it's so funny that you need a super high graphics card to degrade your picture quality back to cathode ray style.
Yeah, I agree. It's a really strange occurrence, but that's what it has come down to. You also have image enhancing filters. So that means you have filters that can enhance the blocky look. Some guys liked it, of course, but there are also others who like the smeared look of XPR or scale 2X. So you can also dabble with that. I would recommend people, if they're interested in this subject, to go to the forum, the LibRetro forum, and to go to shaders, and you can see a lot of examples of this stuff going on. You can also see a shader that emulates a really old 3DFX video card. I don't know if you guys got those machines in the past when you were young.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, basically those old 3DFX voodoo cards, and they had a sort of dithering effect, so they were running at really low color bit rates, 16 BPP or something, and they basically needed to do color dithering to give the impression of more colors, so that's what you can emulate with those shaders.
I see. Now, Rick, go ahead, Eric.
Can I take it back just for some listeners who may not know? Okay, we're talking about emulators. I don't know if it was brought up, but basically an emulator lets you play all these old-time video games is what it's for. I don't know if we mentioned that, just in case someone... I know we know what an emulator is.
He talked about it.
With them.
Yeah, I tried explaining it before, but I don't know if it really made it clear or not.
Not to Eric.
I'm dense.
Yeah. It's basically a program that allows you to play to dumb it down in layman's terms. You can play Sony PlayStation games with it. You can play Nintendo games with it. You can play Sega Genesis games with it. So nice. In fact, the entire library of basically stretching from the 70s to the mid. To the late 90s, in fact. You can play in nearly every game that's out there.
Nice. Since I already did the rat hole, can I just throw a real quick question? What's the very most popular emulated game, do you think, that's people download?
I'm not entirely sure, but I would guess that it will be the Nintendo games. I see those mentioned the most. Also, a lot of people like to play those arcade games, the Street Fighter games, the X-Men versus Street Fighter games. We have those going on. Those are popular. What is also popular? PlayStation games, PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2. Yeah, in fact, we are later going to branch out to include even more cores that are currently in the program. You might have noticed that on the Google Play Store, you can also play Sony PlayStation Portable games.
Awesome.
The emulator PPSSPP it's called. We're also going to do a port of that. And basically, the added advantage will be that RetroArch has a quite sophisticated audio-video synchronization going on, which you can't get with these other programs. And it will basically run very, very, very smoothly. If you got the right hardware,
awesome.
We're going to do a part of that. There's another emulator writer who has made the program YCast. I don't know if you know that. It's a Dreamcast emulator, Sega Dreamcast emulator. He has expressed interest to port that to the Libretto API as well.
Sweet.
So we're also going to see that maybe in September or so. I've also taken great strides now to improve the user interface, because that has really been a sore point of the whole RetroArch program. We're going to have a new menu. The old menu will not be gone, so you can still choose the old menu, but you also have the option of choosing a newer, more eye candy focused menu. It will be called Laka. I don't know if that's difficult for you guys to pronounce or not, but it will basically be on a PSP XMB clone. You know, the interface of the PlayStation 3 and the PSP, it will basically look like that, with all kinds of fade-ins and fade-outs. It will really look a lot nicer than what that green menu currently looks like.
Damn.
I did bring Recast to the show a couple weeks ago, because I was a fan of that system. I know a lot of people feel strongly about that game console. And I'll say, if emulators didn't exist 10 years ago and they were a new thing, I think what we would call them is virtual machines, because that's essentially what an emulator is. It's like a low-level, bare-metal virtual machine dedicated to emulating either, you know, like the NES hardware or Super Nintendo hardware or whatever. So it's really nothing more than a virtual machine where you can pick to load what game you're going to run before you start up the OS, just like you used to stick the cartridge in before you hit the power button. You would pick the game and it would launch the emulator.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an accurate description. For that reason, I'm also considering maybe branching out into other things. That would also be the possibility of maybe emulating MS-DOS, the old operating system from the 80s.
Wow.
We already have a DOS box port. You would need keyboard support for that, which we basically already have. You can already attach a keyboard to the RetroArch program, even on Android. It will just be a tad inconvenient, but maybe you can also use the built-in keyboard. That's something that has to be added yet. But basically, that's another thing we have going on. We are going to look at including a DOSBox port. Another thing I want to emphasize is all these ports are basically I tried to reach the permission of the original authors that made these emulators. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I'm taking credit for them or anything. Basically, the focus of this project of mine is basically we have a cross-platform API, which is called LibRetro. And what we basically do is we take an existing emulator or game and we port this game to this API. And that makes it possible for that game to run inside RetroArch. But I don't want to get ahead of myself, but maybe the revolutionary potential of that is every program that implements the LibRetro API is able to run all these games and all these emulators. So that means that if XBMC implements a LibRetro API, then it can basically function like RetroArch does now. So that basically means that I'm basically making emulators, I'm basically porting emulators to a sort of middleware that makes it possible for other programs to also run these emulators and these games. And that's basically the real aim of the project, is to make a cross-platform API that makes it possible for other programs to also run all these games. So I'm basically I'm not just taking these emulators and backporting them all to my own little program. I'm also making them available to a much bigger ecosystem in itself.
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing, is he's not making the front-end interface that a lot of people are using, and he's not making the back-end interface everyone's using. He's using the tool that's basically grabbing everything, and through open APIs, because it's a GPL program, he does it right. Other people can basically say, here's my emulator, and now make it work with your system. And what you gain by that is being an end user is two things. One, you can just browse your library, hit enter, and it knows what emulator to load. But two, and here's the big one to me, you only have to configure a controller one time. And then if you load NES, the controller works. If you load Super Nintendo, the controller works. If you load N64, the controller works. It just works. There's no extra configuration, because back in the day, every emulator you had to dig through settings and dig through configurations and dig through and do all kinds of things to get the controller to work right in that emulator. So typically what happened was you would find one emulator that worked right and then just kind of stick with that one. And what Daniel's basically letting you do is basically have a single interface to all of your emulators.
And is that RetroArch? Let me see if I get it straight. The relationship between RetroArch and LibRetro. LibRetro is kind of the engine or the interface, and RetroArch is built on top of that? And then all the emulators go inside of RetroArch?
Yeah, basically it's a bit different than that. It's LibRetro is the tool, and RetroArch would be the implement. Yeah, how do you describe it? It will basically be LibRetro will be the tool to take that emulator or that game and to basically have it work inside RetroArch. So that basically means that...
Gotcha. Okay, I understand it. Yeah, okay. I was a little fuzzy on the relationship, but I see it now.
Maybe I have a better description for it. Instead of talking about LibRetro, see it as a plugin. So LibRetro is a plugin system. So the plugin system makes it possible for all these programs to work inside RetroArch, but it also means that this plugin system can also be implemented in other programs. So that means that if you have a media player such as XBMC, they can also take this plugin system, which is totally open source, and they can also include it in their program. So I'm not really creating a closed ecosystem or anything. I'm creating an open ecosystem that makes it possible for other developers to also include all this stuff.
That makes so much more sense to me with the whole plugin system, because I make music with like with digital audio workstations. I could totally see how where you're coming from now.
Indeed. And that's also the reason that we also made last year. We made a very indie-like game. We made a game called Dinotaur, which is basically a very simple puzzle game with a cute little dinosaur that has to push blocks, and he has to push them on top of a fire so that they will melt, so that another dinosaur will come out. It's basically like an old game of Gecko Cubicle, if you know guys know that or something. But basically, it's a very small, cute game. You can also download that from the Google Play Store. It's available from the same developer account called Libretto. And basically, what we're trying to demonstrate with that game is that it's also possible to take an indie game and to port that to the Libretto API and to also play that inside RetroArch or every program that implements Libretto.
I see.
So basically, we are also trying to attract indie game developers or maybe real commercial game developers to also port to this platform. And I think the main advantage for them is that everything will just basically work. We already have this system working on the Xbox 360, on the PlayStation 3, on the Wii, on all these game consoles. We already have it working on OS X. We already have it working on Windows, Linux, Android, iOS, BlackBerry. So that means that if you just port to this API, then you can basically run that same game or that same emulator on all these different systems. You don't have to do anything more than that. And basically, that draws up a lot of comparisons to SDL, which is a middleware layer, but it's a bit different than that. And maybe I can also explain that later, why it's different from SDL or what other people have compared it to, which is not really fair, I think.
I don't even know what SDL is.
Oh, okay. Now, SDL is basically a middleware layer which makes it possible to run to make a program once and to run it on all kinds of different systems. Normally, you would have to take a program and you would have to port that to Windows, you have to port that to Mac, you have to port that to Linux, to Android. It's basically a lot of work and a lot of different APIs you'd have to support. And SDL kind of takes the workload out of that. It basically makes it possible for you to write to one interface and to have it work on all these platforms. That's basically the same as what Libretto does, but the added advantage of Libretto is, I think, what Eric already said, that we have a gamepad abstraction, which is called the RetroPad, and we already make it possible for that game to work with an abstract gamepad. So that means that you only have to configure this controller once. And from that point on, the program basically works like a game console itself. So it basically means that every game you run inside it basically assumes that you're going to play it with a standard PS3 or Xbox game controller. So you can take a puzzle game, you can port that to the API, and it will basically work with your Xbox 360 or PS3 gamepad.
Wow!
So it basically works like a game console itself, because that's also the reason why that menu system we have, why it's entirely gamepad driven. That there's no mouse interaction with it. There's no real, there is touch interaction, but it's a bit limited right now. You can only manipulate that overlay, just the virtual gamepad, and you can scroll down the items like that. We were maybe going to improve that later on, but right now it's basically a gamepad-driven interface.
I see.
Yeah.
Very cool, man.
Daniel, I got a question, and I am totally new to all this. I was intrigued by you saying running on the Xbox 360. Do you have to do some kind of a hardware hack or anything like that to make? How do you physically?
That's where it gets a bit hairy. Indeed, you have to have a modded Xbox 360. For a developer, it will be a lot easier. He can just take his development kit and he can just compile it for his development 360 and run it. So basically, developers have it a lot easier than regular users, because that kind of functionality is not available for regular users. Regular users can only develop for Xbox 360 if they use XME, which is no longer supported, I think. But maybe if I get a PS4 or an Xbox One, I heard that the licensing is a lot more open now. Maybe we can also port to that as well. But I don't yet own those consoles, so I can't say anything about them.
I see.
Okay.
All right. But basically, the big difference of these game consoles in comparison to Android or iOS is they're a lot more siloed off. So that means that you're a lot less free to develop for these systems. You have to write, you have to sign NDAs with Microsoft or Sony to even develop for them. So that means that if you want to develop for these consoles yourself, you have to basically resort to jailbroken consoles.
Right. Yeah, and on, I know like the Apple stuff, they basically will not allow, I think they still will not allow GPL licensed software, and this is a GPL project.
Well, basically, you know, in fact, Retro Arch's GPL license, the LibRetro API itself is not, however. The LibRetro API is an MIT license, so it's a bit more liberal license. So in fact, if somebody were to take the time to make a front end that would be possible to sell commercially, they will in fact be, it will be possible to do that. So you will be able to take the LibRetro API, port it to that, and make a commercial front end for it and sell it. In fact, I think a guy already does that. He made a Dustbox X emulator. He supported the LibRetro API, but he never shared the source code. So this right. stuff is already going on. But of course, I would rather prefer that people upload the source code somewhere, because that engenders a more open ecosystem.
Gotcha.
So I
have one, to be honest, Daniel, extremely important question. Everywhere I look on LibRetro, on every platform where I see RetroArch available, it's completely free. So my question is how can I, as a person who honestly feels very passionately that I want to promote you, I want to support you, and I want you to continue working on this, how can I, as a user of this system, support you?
Yeah, that basically gets into the whole donation question. We don't officially support sending in donations, because I'm afraid that it would cause a big rift in the development community. Right now, they're only contributing because of their passion, because they want to basically they want to have fun making a core, they want to have fun making a shader, and money doesn't really enter into that. I'm afraid that as soon as you enter money into it, there will be a lot of greed, a lot of envy, and it will basically all fall apart. So that's the reason why I'm keeping this donation free right now. However, there is the ability to send gifts in the form of hardware donations. So that option is available if you'd like to exercise it.
So about beer? Can I send you beer? Like send you beer?
That wouldn't serve much good, I'm afraid, because I'm more looking for hardware companies that basically have a new product to sell. Because we also don't have the funds to buy all this hardware ourselves, so it's basically we already got a lot of companies sending in products if they have something, such as I think even BlackBerry sent over a BlackBerry phone for development, because I didn't have a BlackBerry phone, and there were a couple of other guys that wanted to sell a fork or something, and it was becoming a bit of a problem. So a real BlackBerry developer stepped forward and said, okay, I can maybe arrange for you to have this phone. So things basically worked themselves out that way. But yeah.
Or you must have some hardware.
But regarding the donation question, I know what you mean, because right now we really need to get a new hosting plan for the website, because we want to expand and basically add the build button, things like that. And indeed, more money enters into it, because you do have to pay those costs. I'm not sure what we're going to do. Maybe we should think about it. I don't know. Yeah, basically the reason why I'm a bit hesitant to do this is because I really want to promote this API, this interface, as something that other developers are really comfortable to work with. And I think by not taking in money, they will be a lot more comfortable, in fact, to back it. Otherwise, that will be the assumption that I may be gaining something from them.
I gotcha. It's a good strategy.
That's so basically, this is something that basically goes into the other project that I have running right now. Maybe I can elaborate on them a bit more now. I also have plans to, we're also going to expand into other things. We're going to make RetroBox. RetroBox will basically be, right now the RetroArch program basically works like a game console. So it's basically like a Steam box or something. Like the other guy already pointed out, he had it running on this Intel device, a really small set-top box, which you can attach a gamepad to, and it basically functions like a real game console. So we're going to make a special Linux distro, which will be you will be able to insert it into a variety of devices, and it will just work out of the box, in fact. So the gamepad will already be pre-configured, the emulators will already be there, there will be a nice interface, yada yada. And it is basically the same concept as Steambox, but I think the real advantage will be that Steambox is going to cost a lot, I think. I don't really like this gamepad that they're pushing, this really weird halfway breed of a mouse and a gamepad. I think just having a regular game controller is going to be a lot better. And I think Steambox is not really going to be able to expand to ARM platforms. And right now there are a lot of ARM boxes. You have a lot of vendors selling these ARM boards. You have a company called QBox. You have a company called, you have a product called Odroid from Hardkernel. Yep. These are basically platforms you can buy, and you plug them to a monitor, and you can basically run Android on them, or you can run Linux on them. The main thing I see with those things right now is that they're not really plug and play. They're not really appliances. It's basically like they're only meant for real hackers to be basically program on and to basically tinker with. And the aim of the RetroBox program will be to basically make it possible to turn that box into a real game console without doing a lot of work. So you can basically insert that distro on it and it will basically work like a real game console. That's basically what we want to accomplish.
Wow. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, and the main advantage, I think, will be we already have NetPlay working, the real advantage will be when we will have all these devices on all these different platforms all interconnected to each other, which will basically make cross-platform NetPlay possible. So it doesn't matter if you're running on iOS or if you're running on Android, you will basically be able to play with each other. So that will be another great advantage to that whole system.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So when do you plan on having some of this stuff launched?
Well, it basically depends. I'm going to work on this with a French guy. He already has a website out. It's called Laka.tv. You can maybe check that out later. It's he basically has a really nice PlayStation-esque menu going on. We already have that integrated into RetroArch itself. It will basically be another optional menu. We've basically made the menu into another plugin system, so it will be possible to have different menus in the future.
Wow.
That will become our base for RetroBox, a more eye-candy-friendly interface. It will maybe have box art for the games. It will basically have streaming videos on the side that, kind of like how you can look at ROM collections like in XBMC. It will basically look like that, yeah.
Gotcha. Wow, yeah. Some really interesting projects you got going on. Really, thank you for coming on the show. You are an amazingly intelligent fellow and really pushing stuff out there. I think it's really cool what you're doing.
Yeah, and let's be clear. This can only be possible because I have a lot of team members working with me. A big shout out so should go to the Meister, which is Hans Christian Artsen. He's a Norwegian guy. He basically started the project. I'm basically the maintainer now. I'm basically head dev number two now, but basically turned number one right now. But he deserves a lot of the credit for the program. I basically pushed it forward to have it on all these platforms and to have it support all these different emulators.
I see.
So that's basically where I come in. But basically, we formed a very good team over the years, and we've attracted a lot of other developers which are really interested into this system. So if you want to check us out, you can go to libretto.com, you can go to the forums, you can go to IRC, and you can basically check out what we're doing. We also want to port more games to it. We want to make an augmented reality program with it. That will also be very interesting to check out. So basically, check out what we're doing, and I think you will be very interested in what we have to offer.
Absolutely. Check out, go to libretro.com, check out everything he has, and just to dip your foot in the water and get a taste, just go to Google Play, download RetroArch, and just mess around with it. Have fun. You'll see what the power that you're dealing with there. Well,
yeah, and if I might interject,
yeah,
a new version is coming out soon. It's called version 1.1. It will be a real improvement, a much better interface, much better support. So really, if you don't like how it looks right now, strap on your seatbelts because it's going to look a lot better a week from now. So
is it going to have shaders?
Those shaders, they are already in there. I think we have over 100 shaders or so in the program already.
I meant for the interface. Is the interface going to look like a cathode ray? Forget it. It was a bad joke. Forget it.
Yeah.
Hey, Daniel, thanks so much for coming on the show and staying up late. I know it's not early over there, and we really appreciate the knowledge you gave us tonight.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks for having me on the show.
And that's going to be it for this episode of Android App Addicts. Hope everyone enjoyed it. Talk to you next episode.